Welcome to hour number two of the new three-hour edition of Boston Public Radio. He is Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. This is Boston Public Radio, 89.7. Oops, just 89.7, no more point. 89.7 WGBH.
Well, hello again to you, Marjorie.
Hello, Jim.
So here with us in Studio 3 to take our questions and yours is Secretary of Education, Matt Malone. He's at 877-301-8970. It's 877-301-8970. All things schools are on the table. Secretary Malone, it's great to see you again.
It's great to be back here. The highlight of my week is being here with you.
Aww. It is?
Of course it is.
That's been a pretty bad week, then, huh?
You guys are fun and exciting radio, and I love being with you.
Oh, okay.
You.
He doesn't say that to all the talk show hosts.
No, he does.
I think he might. So I want to know from you, how long have you been Secretary of Education, please, Secretary Malone?
20 months.
20 months, which is not a huge amount of time. And yet I've read where you have visited 270 schools, elementary schools and secondary schools. That's a lot of schools.
I think we're closer to 300 right now. In the past 2 weeks, I think we've done probably 16 new school visits. Our governor governs for the Commonwealth, and he's encouraged us as secretaries to be out across the Commonwealth, and I feel it's important that my role is to be in the field listening to troops. And quite frankly, troops are parents, teachers, students, everyone that has a say or a role in the educational process.
But our view, Matt Malone, is you have to listen to those students, teachers, and parents far too early in the morning. We're with the American Pediatrics Association. I know a number of school systems are experimenting with this. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Where are we on the whole question of going along with these experts and saying the teenage brain is such they need more sleep, they shouldn't be getting to school at virtually dawn, start school later? One, where are you? And two, where are school systems on that?
All right, so what you're referring to, and for our listeners, is what's known as the circadian rhythms. And the circadian rhythms is the brain research around when the brain awakes. And that we know that for adolescents, our brains don't turn on until roughly 9 o'clock or so. And unfortunately, since the 18th century, we've had kids in calculus at 7:20 in the morning. I was superintendent of schools in Swampscott. I was able to push back start times when I was in Swampscott.
How long ago was that? That was
6 years ago.
Oh, really? How late was the start time?
We were able to move it back, I think, 30 minutes. That was a compromise. But, good is not the enemy of great. I mean, I think this is an idea whose, literally, no pun intended, whose time has come.
So, Secretary Malone, first, I should say, you can call in with your questions at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970, or you can email us at bpr@wgbh.org. I want to ask you about the more money for higher ed deal that we've read a lot about. What's going on? What's your proposal? What should be happening there? What is happening?
So, we're looking to get to a proposition where higher ed is funded with 50% of operating dollars coming from the state. We're trying to get to a balance where we can reduce and keep reasonable fees and tuitions. I mean, that's the bottom line for parents. It's the bottom line for students. And we're looking for continued and increased investments by the House and the Senate, which I can say they've really done a good job over the last few years by the leadership of our
governor. After having cut it year after year.
I think our governor's been out front supporting increased investments in higher ed. I think the House and the Senate have seen the light, if you will, on that and have supported. We're very thankful that we have good representatives on the higher ed committee on both the House and the Senate. And I think we need to get to a place over the next few years where we're being much more competitive with the other leading public institutions across the country and how we fund higher education.
Yeah, by the way, in case people don't know this, the state used to spend a lot of money funding higher ed, and then the percentage dropped dramatically. What do we used to do? What are we doing now?
So we used to be above the 50-50 proposition, and quite frankly, we're getting back closer to 50-50. We're not actually there yet, but we're in a place that UMass was able to freeze fees this year. We're looking, last year the state college universities were able to freeze fees. Look, we want to be affordable. I think the product that we offer is unparalleled. The cost model, the cost proposition, though, for working parents, for working students is still, for some, putting school out of reach. And this is a gap issue for us. This is how we increase the economy, we continue to grow, we open doors. This is an equity issue. We want to ensure that our state college and universities are affordable.
Speaking of colleges and universities, one of the initiatives your office is working on is this so-called early college high school grant. What does this mean in real? What does this mean in English for real people?
Okay, so an early college high school model is a model where students that are in high school are begin to take college-level courses in 11th and 12th grade.
To make them more likely to be adequately prepared when they actually get to college if they go. Is that the notion?
Two reasons. One, they're actually earning college credit while they're in high school
to make
school more affordable. Two, they're preparing, of course, as you will. And three, quite frankly, for some kids are bored with high school. This is a way to get them engaged. We've found two populations that this is a home run for. One are dropouts. We're finding that kids that have dropped out because they found school to be too boring. This is a great pathway for them. And two, for advanced students who are ready because school's been boring them, are ready for advanced work, we're finding this another great connection point. Look, the bottom line is this model works. We have great examples in the Commonwealth. We have Mount Wachusett. We have one in Amesbury. We have several, one in West Springfield. We have them across the Commonwealth. And we have the potential for one of the greatest ones right here in Boston between Roxbury Community College and Madison Park, known as RoxMap. We've engaged 19 students in this model last spring. We had 19 students in a summer internship, and we hope to enroll upwards of 100 this year in this early college high school partnership between those two institutions.
But the startup numbers were disappointing, were they not? I mean, didn't you have higher hopes for the early phases of this thing?
One of the realities that we're dealing with is the issue of computation and comprehension, and we had a lot of students that couldn't get over the hurdle on the ACCUPLACER, which is the assessment they use for college readiness. It's one of the reasons why PARC, I think, is such a hot-button issue as we think about college readiness and how we assess that.
You should say, stop right there. We talked about PARC the other day, but for those who aren't listening, what is it? Is it an MCAS alternative? What's the state of implementation, if any?
So the PARC is the next generation assessment, which assesses college and career readiness. It is an assessment that we are field testing, and it's developed in partnership between the K-12 community and the higher ed community. We field tested this past year. Next year, districts got to pick between the two assessments. About 60% of the Commonwealth next year, districts in the Commonwealth, will be using the PARC assessments. About 40% will be using the MCAS. However, to be clear with everyone, all 10th graders in the Commonwealth will still be doing the MCAS. That is the state-mandated graduation requirement.
I'm going to get back to PARC and MCAS in just a second, but as long as you mentioned Roxbury Community College and Madison PARC, as you know, Commissioner, there was a lot of criticism to the joining of those two in the first place because Roxbury Community College had terrible financial problems. And a couple of weeks ago, at the start of school, there was this almost unbelievable story out of Madison PARC about kids running around, was it 6 days or 7 days, without even a schedule. You get the sense that there's at least was, if not now, totally incompetent leadership at both of these places. And you think to yourself, how do these kids have a chance if one place has got terrible financial problems and one place can't even get the schedules going?
So let's just correct a couple misnomers. We've addressed Roxbury Community. The president and the team at Roxbury Community College, with new leadership at the board level, has righted that ship. I think Roxbury Community College is on the path to solvency. They've cleaned up a lot in this past year, and we're happy with the work that's happening at RCC. Yes, it's frustrating that we had some operational issues at Madison PARC that are quite unfortunate and unacceptable. However, I cannot stand for people that say it's not worth doing something because what we're doing right now is good enough. Our idea to combine the two around this concept of an early college pathway has been successful for the students who were in it. It will be continue to be successful for those who we will engage. Look, this is long-term work. It's hard work. And no one said that, you know, everything can be wrapped up in a nice little bow. But I would rather go down fighting for these kids then give up and say we can't and let's just close these institutions.
That is former Marine and now Secretary of Education Matt Malone. We're going to get to your calls in a minute. Anything relating to schools and education from K through higher ed, 877-301-8970. I want to get back, as Marjorie said, to this MCAS thing, this PARC thing. I'm going to give you a quiz. You ready for a quiz?
Yes.
You're nervous, aren't you?
I am. I'm sweating.
Well, you should be. I want you to identify the person who said this, and then I'm going to give you a hint even before you answer, because I don't want you to embarrass yourself as Secretary of Education.
It happens a lot.
Okay, number one, don't answer because I'm going to help you out. A leading public official in Massachusetts recently said, quote, "We assess too much." Now, before you tell me who that is, I'm going to give you a hint. He's the same person who coined the phrase that has become mythical on this show, trash is our enemy, homework is our friend. Who would that be, please, Secretary Malone?
That would be the Secretary of Education.
Who is that? That would be you.
Be Matt Malone.
So
I
what do you mean
that
we assess too much?
Well, I think we are in the midst of a point in time where we're trying to find the right balance. I'm not anti-assessment. What I am anti is assessment gone wild. I think we have to be human and practical and find a balance. Assessment is critically important, critically important. Standards are critically important. But we have to find the balance between how much is enough and how much is busy work. And quite frankly, I think the Board of Education had a really nice conversation about this, discussion about this today at the Board of Ed meeting. I think a lot of folks in the field have been talking about this. I think we'll get the answer right as we go through it. But we're at a balance of time where we're feeling that, you know, again, the mandate of assessment versus the reality of what's happening in the classroom are a little off kilter. I think thoughtful people, which we have in the state, will figure this answer out. And I think over the next year, the board will make some decisions on balance of assessment.
Well, what do you think about this so-called PARC test versus the MCAS, Secretary Malone?
So I like the concept of the PARC test. I like the concept of a college readiness assessment. I think that one of the problems that, you know, several years ago when this came out was, hey, we're going to have a national assessment. And I got really excited about that because, you know, as a former superintendent, you know, I'd like to compare ourselves to other states in the union to see how we're doing, how we measure up. And over time, over the last, through, you know, politics or whatever, you know, that coalition has fallen apart. So now there's really like 12 states that will use it. You know, and I think that is somewhat frustrating. But at the end of the day, whether we stick with the current MCAS or move to PARC, regardless of the choice, what we know is that we've gotten our bang for our buck, if you will, out of MCAS, and we're going to need a next generation assessment as technology improves, as the needs of college and career readiness are further delineated or articulated. We're going to need an assessment that is a better assessor of actually what students know and be able to do rather than what they're able to respond back to you on a standard-based assessment. It's the idea of skills and assessing what students can actually produce that excites me about PARC.
Okay, you can tweet questions to the secretary at BOSS, B-O-S, Public Radio. You can email us at WGBH. Where is it? BPRWGBH.org.
Correct.
Did I say that?
BPR? BPR at WGBH.org.
And let's go to the phones. George from Lakefield. You're on with Secretary of Education Matt Malone. What's your question, George? George? Hi.
And I see the Board of Education, the academic people, ruining vocational education, taking more and more time away from the shop time, the related time and the theory time that is so important in the trades, and making teachers that are never going to use. Right now, the school I used to teach in, all those teachers are sitting in a three-hour meeting on academic curriculum, or whatever you want to call it. It will never be used in the shop. You're wasting the teacher's time, the student's time. It's going down the tubes.
Okay, don't go away, George. Secretary, what's your response?
Yeah, I just don't agree with George. I'm sorry, George, I don't agree with you. You know, our vocational high schools in the Commonwealth are actually achieving at higher rates than a lot of our comprehensive high schools. Those teachers in the shop classes are doing an amazing job contextualizing the curriculum, getting it comprehension and computation through hands-on practical experiences. You know, vocational education is something that I think we're going to be expanding in the Commonwealth because connected activities work. You know, I'm a proud graduate of a vocational program at Newton North High School. If it wasn't for my training as a drafting major, mechanical drafting major, I would not have graduated from high school. It's what kept me in school, that and wrestling. But I think that vocational education teachers don't sell themselves short. You are teaching the critical skills around computation and comprehension. And that time that those teachers are invested in right now is the most important thing they could be doing right now in preparing them to deliver a high-quality program.
George, thank you very much for the call. You know, Secretary Malone, I'm a huge fan of VOC-Ed, and I'm glad to hear you declare that support, which is no surprise to me. Waiting lists are in the thousands. Thousands and thousands and thousands of parents want their kids in vocational programs for a whole variety of reasons. What are we going to do about that? I mean, this is an area, it seems to me, where elected officials are masters of the rhetoric and are dunces at the execution. They love voc-ed, and they're apparently not willing to make it happen.
So, I mean, I think our investment in voc ed has to increase over the next few years. I think we need more programs. I think we also need to look at offering Chapter 74 programs.
What's that?
That's vocational education.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Offering those programs in our comprehensive high schools more. Marlboro High School is a comprehensive high school that has an amazing STEM academy. That Mashpee High School, the greatest example of a comprehensive high school that actually they go from design to milling to production in a non-vocational high school. It's like, that's the kind of stuff that gets parents and kids excited. That's where
Excuse me.
Learn.
I have told you, my older daughter who graduated, both my kids, you met one at City Year. My other kid who graduated from Cambridge Ringe in Latin was in an academic program and on the side was taking auto mechanics, which was one of the most exciting things she did. Yeah. So I guess she got one of those joint
Does she voc- change your oil?
What?
Does she change your oil?
She
trim?
Hasn't, but she could. And she could do far more, I should say. So those combination programs are fabulous. But,
fabulous.
You know, that's great. With all due respect, you don't appropriate the money when you have, what, 3,500, 4,000 people dying to get in who can't get in. It's a real problem, no?
Well, you know, I can lobby. I can continue to use the bully pulpit. And, you know, the help from folks in the field to put pressure on the Hill to continue this investment, to roll out more programming, I think would be helpful. We know that in an open market, parents vote with their feet. Vocational schools, charter schools, private schools, parochial schools, and public schools are all competing for the same kids. Now, we all want the same thing. We all want to open doors for kids. And how we do that allows for the creativity of education. And vocational schools is one model where we feel strongly that there's future. Let me just say one more thing. I think that if we look forward 20 years, I think that our community colleges and our vocational schools will be much more intricately linked. I like the idea of thinking about how we can think differently about our vocational schools becoming true 12-month, 24-hour-day operations and open their doors for all people. So, for example, a kid at Boston Latin School that needs to learn how to bang nails could also take carpentry classes over at Madison Park.
I love that.
So that's the kind of thing that I hope for in this world.
We are talking to the Secretary of Education, Matt Malone. Our number is 877-301-8970. Our email address is bpr@wgbh.org. Andrea emailed about an hour and a half ago, so she's very patient. So I'm going to read her email now. She says she has a bachelor's degree from Salem State, but she never taught or was licensed. I'm interested in getting into teaching as a career. What are my options to become licensed, and what are my chances of finding a teaching job in Massachusetts?
So there's several pathways that you can take, one of which is to go back to school and apply in a teacher prep master's program. Another is to show up and apply as a career changer for a license. I would support the idea of going back to school and getting the master's degree, perhaps working as a paraprofessional or a teacher's assistant or a long-term sub while you're doing that to get the field experience. But we want folks coming back. We're very excited about pipeline. We like to diversify the pipeline as well. We want to recruit and retain the highest quality people as practitioners in the field. And I think that there are several options for licensure. And yes, there are jobs. And we are always looking, particularly in the higher level sciences, special needs, and second language fields.
I've wondered about this. Say you were one of these people that did work for 20 or 30 years in a different kind of career, and you said at 50 years old, I'm an expert in finance, or I'm an expert in German or Spanish or whatever it is. How long would it take you to get a job? You do have to go back and get some kind of teacher certification, don't you?
So you can do a little bit of both. You could actually have a job and do the additional training, or vice versa. You know, I met a teacher out in Oakmont High School this past week who was a builder. And now he's running the world's most amazing STEM program in central Massachusetts.
What's a STEM program, please, for people who don't know?
So that's science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. So this is the hands-on. I walked into a class, and these guys are building circuit boards. They're doing robotics. And this guy's a builder. And I said to him, man, I need more builders like you in schools.
That's Matt Malone. He's the Secretary of Education. You are George from Swampscott, where this guy used to work. George, welcome to Boston Public Radio. Hey there.
Hey, how are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
Good. I just wanted to asked Ms. Malone about school sizing and the trend of some towns now to start getting rid of neighborhood schools and putting them into one big school, where you have issues with kids getting lost and traffic becoming a complication for drop off and pick up, especially in the younger grades like K through 6.
And, George, before you go away, I know the Secretary can answer this, but is that for financial reasons that these kinds of combinations are happening, or what?
Well, I mean, if you also want to address kind of how the new school process, because of the changes caused by the Taj Mahal in Newton.
Newton North is what he's, the new Newton North is the Taj Mahal to some.
That's great.
But you know, where essentially what happens is the school wants to build a new school, or this city wants to build a new school, and they go to the state and ask for permission and or ask for funding, and then the state gives them a grant. But then the state takes over the siting of the school as well as the building of the school.
Got it. I know nothing about it. I'm sure the secretary knows everything.
And I had no idea that there was a move to get away from neighborhood elementary schools. Is that happening?
In Swampscott, it is.
Stay on the line, George. Yep. Let's hear what the secretary has to say.
And George, thank you for the call. In the specifics that George is talking about, local communities have brought forward by their building committees several options for a plan. And then the local town meeting votes on which to apply for. In this case, it's a one-building operation. So Swampscott would have essentially one school that's for elementary and middle school and then one high school. Now, it's a small town, and this is, quite frankly, it is an issue of economics and cost. And the state necessarily doesn't tell you what you're going to do, but they support the most efficient and invest-worthy, I know it doesn't sound right, but plan. Mm-hmm. And then in Swampscott case, they're looking right now at a one-building school, which, quite frankly, I think is a pretty good idea for Swampscott. Now, I say that, I couch that by saying I did close an elementary school when I was superintendent in Swampscott, and I still have arrows in my back. It's a very painful process for a community to lose an elementary school. I get that. I understand that. But I think that when we think about the future and we look at student enrollment and we see populations decreasing, which they are, I'm hopeful that local systems are looking at more consolidation of services around economy of scale. Now, again, this is local context issues. The state doesn't get involved in saying what you must do or what you shouldn't do. What the state gets involved in is good ideas and says, hey, this idea may work better than another.
George, thanks for the call. Anonymous emailed, he or she is from Acton, and wants to know why the hotline for teachers to call the Department of Education is only open 2 hours a day. Is that true?
I don't know specifically, but I do know that we have a human capital issues in terms of, I wish we had more personnel to be able to take calls. We just don't have that type of support. I would encourage that folks call when they can. I know that folks on the hotline do return calls when they're left in the day, and I'm hopeful that we know this is a real issue, and we're trying to find a way to help support the capacity.
What's your cell number for the off hours?
Yeah.
He's Matt Malone, the Secretary of Education. Stan was on the phone and got cut off, it appears. He wanted to talk about the 2010 bullying law, and I know there's a report that came out of the governor's office
you were
intimately involved in. What's it called, Marjorie?
I believe it is this beautiful package we just got here, the School Safety and Security Task Force report.
What's the deal?
That you brought with you today.
So our governor put together a school safety and security task force that spent several months developing a framework for how to think about school safety and security. Of course, bullying is a part of that. We've released 27 recommendations at both the school, district, and state level to help support school safety and security. We are just announced a grant program to fund small grants to help systems enhance their school safety and security. And our governor is just appointing a technical assistance team. If called upon, and this is voluntary, but local systems can call us, and we will send a team to their system to help assess their state of readiness and give advice on how they can improve school safety and security.
By the way, Stan, who I think was the one who initiated that, who got cut off his back. Stan, do you have something to add to the question or the comment that was made by the secretary?
Yeah.
Please.
And thanks for this. I'm sorry about that.
Sure, go ahead.
The 2010 bullying law was amended by the legislature in the last session and it added a series of requirements, including amendments to all school bullying plans required under the new law to provide special protections for vulnerable populations and training. There's also requirements around assessment of school climates. The Youth Risk Behavior Survey for 2013 still has alarming data on bullying. It's a major issue in the schools. And my concern is that the implementation steps have not started and that there was an outstanding job done after 2010 by the DESE and by John Bino, particularly in his staff, in rolling out the implementation of the 2010 law.
Stan, I don't mean to interrupt, but can you get to the question so we can get the secretary focused, please?
Is there some way we can get started on the implementation of the 2014 amendment?
It's happening as we speak. I mean, the team at the Department of Ed, it's a regulatory body, is working on that right now. And stay tuned. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, we have too much bullying in school. We have too much bullying in neighborhoods. We have too much bullying in the world. And this is something that we're not going to look away from. And we're not going to be Pollyanna. We're going to take this on.
Stan, thanks for the call. You know, speaking of too much, we have too much poverty in kids. I was stunned to see that the poverty rate for children in the Commonwealth has gone up over the last couple of years. 1 in 6 kids is poor. You probably never knew this woman. Kathy Kelly was a friend of mine who was a first grade teacher, president of the Boston Teachers Union, then president of the MFT. She testified in front of the legislature many a time, and I was there, which she said, if you're just going to give me money and that's all for schools, don't bother. If the kid is hungry at home, scared walking through his or her neighborhood on the way to school, doesn't have decent clothes, they can't learn. How does someone like you do your job when 1 in 6 kids walks into a school from a family that is below the poverty line?
So, I don't mean to be snarky about this, but despite that, we still lead the nation in student achievement. We're taking this on through investments in extended learning time and wraparound services and investments in early childhood and child readiness and pathways with higher ed and alternative education. It's a holistic approach to the world. Our governor gets that good government is across silos and it's focused on people. I had a moment yesterday where I visited something called Inner City Weightlifting in Dorchester yesterday. This organization works with the most challenging young adults in the entire country. These are all tough, hard kids, violence adjudicated. And they connect these kids through weightlifting. They provide wraparound services. They give them a pathway through personal training for employment. But at the same time, they're doing the engagement around GED and high school diploma. Education is the equalizer. Our investments in it cannot just be public. It's private as well. And when I see people like this group I met yesterday and the God's work they do every single day, changing lives, saving lives, and you say, well, we have poor kids. Yeah, we do. And we're going to get more poor kids. And they're going to come even poorer in 10 years than they are now. And they're going to be more broken. And there's going to be more trauma. And there's going to be more excuses about why we can't do this work. And I say to every one of those people, yeah, it's not money we throw. It's heart. And we got to throw heart into this work. And we got to support the practitioners and thank them for what they do every day because they're saving lives. So our teachers, our leaders, our community-based people, thank you for what you do. We are the greatest state in the nation because of the foxhole-to-foxhole work of those people and not all the folks that say something's impossible. I can't stand the impossible people. I am an optimist, and I get out of bed every day to run to work for one reason. All kids count, and that's what we're focused on despite their situations. I will say this, and I want to, before I get thrown out of here today, tomorrow night at 6:30, we will be doing a Twitter chat at MassEducation, which is my Twitter handle. We will be doing the first nighttime Twitter chat in my 20 months on this job, and we'd like to get practitioners involved in this. That's why we're doing
what
it.
What time is this deal?
This is at 6:30 tomorrow night at Mass Education. We will answer all your questions. We'll spend as much time as we need to, and I'm hopeful we actually go beyond education as well. You want to talk about good restaurants or apple picking or music, whatever you want to talk about, we'll do, but I want to make sure that our teachers' voices, they're feeling valued.
So
heard.
We're not going to ask you the apple picking questions we were going to ask. We'll leave that till the Twitter.
We are going to ask it. So you just mentioned being first in the nation and being optimistic and stuff. I'm just flipping through the school safety and security report. And I have to say, Secretary Malone, I've never seen such a bunch of good looking people in my entire life. Are these people all working for the state? the Department
all,
of Education?
They're all Jim Browdy's relatives.
Well, that's fine.
Taking those models. Photos.
Let's not get into that. Peter from North Reading, you're on quickly if you can with the Secretary of Education, Matt Malone. Hey there, Peter.
Thank you. Thank you so much. My question is very quickly, what is it that the education system needs the most? And what can I, as a parent of a kindergartner and two other daughters that will be kindergartners in the next 2 years, do about it?
I love that question. Go ahead.
Two things. One, You can advocate for increased investment in early childhood specifically. We got a problem where we have too many kids still on wait lists. We're trying to reduce that, but there's still too many, and we know that that is a gap closer for most of the Commonwealth. Two, you can get involved at the local level. You can attend school committees. You can run for school committee yourself. I think that that political act alone by parents really advocating for the needs of not only their children, but, you know, all the children in their community across the Commonwealth can be two things that you can do to help education. And you can continue to sound the alarm on affordability at higher ed. I mean, those to us are the, you know, as we leave, as I say, we leave behind a really good system over the last 8 years. We've had the educational governor. The next administration is really going to need to pick it up because innovation, education, and infrastructure has been a winning strategy.
Peter, let me just say, as a parent of two kids who went through the public school system and Marjorie, a parent of three, the squeaky wheel really does get it. Involvement as much as you can. Before you go away, or as you say, before we throw you out of the studio, which we would not have termed it that way, you were engaged in something that I've actually never seen before. People campaign for governor, people campaign for mayor, people campaign for state rep. You were essentially campaigning to be the next superintendent of the Boston Public. Well, you are. You're shaking your head, but you are. Are you? I don't mean that in a negative way, but you've publicly announced, which is very unusual, you're dying to be the next superintendent of Boston. Is that not correct?
So let's just correct the facts. I had to file a disclosure because of state law that I applied for that job. That is a fact. And when I was asked a question by the Globe, you're damn right I want that job. I want to be the next superintendent of Boston.
Why are you the right guy for the job?
Because I feel I can make a difference. I feel that I will work relentless and nonstop to love every single kid in this system, to open doors and close gaps. I think I have a track record to prove it, and I love the city of Boston. And when you say,
you
what
live
do
in
you
Boston,
want?
Right?
I live in Boston. My two kids are Boston Public School students. So when someone says to me, what do you want to do next? I'm not hide or shy away from, I'd like to be the superintendent of the Boston Public Schools.
Have you spoken to Walsh yet?
I mean, I've made my comments known to everybody. I mean, I think people know what my interests are in life. And I think that based on a practical strategy around getting results, I've proven it in two systems. I've proven it in another state when I was in California. I think that if we put together a team that's focused on student achievement through comprehension and computation with an innovative strategy that's both pre-K and higher ed, I think we can really do a great job of making a good system great. And when I say to you, what do you want, you know, what do you want in your next superintendent? If I asked you guys that, you know, you can have somebody that's out there in the front, in the field, with their sleeves rolled up, that understands the importance of instruction, that understands the impact that teachers have in the life of a child. That's the guy I would like, or girl, running the school system. And I'm saying to those who are interested in listening, I'd like to be considered for that post.
This tape is on the way to Ireland as we speak. Secretary of Education Matt Malone, tomorrow night at 6:30, there is a Twitter discussion you're hosting at Mass Education, correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Great to see you, Matt Malone. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much, Matt Malone, for being here. Coming up, the Rockefeller family, who made their riches from oil, have announced that they're pulling their charity fund out of fossil fuels. So it's business as usual, no longer business of the future. Nancy Kane joins us for that conversation next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.